And T. Walker, we're talking in the cabin of Charlie Jones in Nome on July 9th, 1960. Mr. Walker was born in San Francisco on August 23rd, 1880. Mr. Walker, would you tell us something about your father and how you came to Alaska?
Okay. My father was a Russian. He came over from Vladivostok. Well, there's a kind of a mystery about my father's real history. He's always talking about the Alexander the Third assassination. And he belonged to a club, an organization that they call the Nihilists. He's always talking Nihilists to me. Whenever he got a few drinks in him, that's when he started off. Talking Nihilists. Well, they got Alexander the Third, all right. I mean the second. No, the third. No, the first. It is one of the Alexanders. They dynamited him. Well, then these parties that were in that organization, they separated in all directions, and they got quite a few of them, and they hung them and butchered them. And father, instead of going towards the coast, he comes overland, and he lands at Vladivostok. Of course, it took him 3-4 years to make that trip.
Uh-huh. Walked. Yeah.
And he landed over and got to Vladivostok, and he jumped on board of a freighter and landed in San Francisco. Well, from San Francisco, he got on board of a boat. He found out that the Russians were, he's under an assumed name.
Yes. He took the name of Walker then?
No.
Oh,
no,
he didn't?
No.
I'll wait.
His name was, well, I'll wait.
Yes,
too.
Okay.
He got into San Francisco and he found out that the Russians, they had some kind of a holdings up in Alaska, and he headed for Alaska. My father was a marine engineer by trade. So when he landed at St. Michael's, they found out that he was a marine engineer, and they had a little boat running up and down the Yukon that went as far as Russian Mission in them early days.
Yes, you don't know the year.
No.
Uh-huh.
It's
doesn't matter.
Yeah, doesn't matter. So, anyways, they put him on board this boat as an engineer, and he kept that job till they got note that Alaska was going to be sold or traded off to the Russians. That's when they landed at St. Michael's.
Uh-huh.
In the meantime, an American gunboat come into St. Michael's, and he didn't know what was going on. Pretty soon, the big shots, they come ashore, and the Russian flag was up in the pole, he says. And they sent word out beforehand for all these traders in the outlying districts to come on in, which they did, which they had to, because at a certain time of the year, when the steamer landed at St. Michael's, all these traders, they would come in and get their goods.
Uh-huh.
And then after they loaded up, why, they beat it home. Well, this time they got wind that they had to stay, and some big thing is going to go on. Americans come along, American soldiers and guns and uniforms, and the Russians, they're standing there. He told them, the commanding officer of St. Michael, he says, arrangements had been made with St. Petersburg for Alaska to be sold to the United States. And up goes the American flag, down comes the Russian flag. He says, now, Alaska belongs to the United States government. There's a Russian boat down there. He's telling all these old timers. My father is amongst a bunch.
Yeah.
He was there. He says, all who want to go to Vladivostok, to Russia, there's a free passage boat. But all who want to become citizens of the United States, the flag's up there, there's automatically become citizens.
Uh-huh.
So the Russian commanding officer that St. Miles at that time, he told these Russians, he says, well, free passage to your homeland. All who want to go, go ahead, jump on board. They all said, NATO, 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 NATO. That's a dog country, sir. We come from there. We've been there. They were all convicts.
Oh,
they were all convicts, been shipped from Siberia to Russia, through Alaska.
Uh-huh.
So that's how my father, he says, Fred, he says, because my Russian name, my father's real name was Ilya Tataurov.
Tataurov. Tataurov. Oh,
Tataurov.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Fine.
Ilya Tataurov.
Uh-huh.
He says, son, he says, that's my adopted name.
Oh.
He says, my real name is hushed up. I don't want them to know it over in Russia.
Yeah.
They find out that so-and-so is in Russia, they're going to take me, and I'll either be shot or hung.
Yeah.
Because, he says, we assassinated Alexander, the emperor of Russia.
Uh-huh.
Well, in the meantime, he got married to my mother.
Uh-huh.
He's in 70-something. Well, I had a brother and a sister. My sister was 4 years older than I am. And a brother I had, he was 6 years older, but he died. So, stop it a while, huh? Well, the Russians were told by the commanding officer at St. Michael's that there was free passage on board the Russian boat for them to go to Vladivostok. But all these old timers, they said, NATO, 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 crying, NATO, that's a dog country, it is. We come from there, we know what Russia is. When they told their American citizens, they threw their caps up in the air and so happy and hugging each other and kissing each other. We are American citizens. Father was telling me this.
Yes.
Well, after he was the engineer on the boat for a few years and going up and down the Yukon, he finally married my mother in St. Michael's.
Your mother was Eskimo, wasn't
yeah.
she?
My mother's a half-breed Russian.
Oh, she was half Eskimo and half Russian.
Indian.
Half Indian
half
and half
Indian.
Russian. Well, that's interesting,
half
too.
Indian. Well, now quite a few have been asking me, what are you, Fred? Indian. What's your mother? Half-breed Russian. What is your father? A Russian. Oh.
You're really more Russian.
Yeah, I said, only one quarter Indian blood, but I always let it go by. I said,
yeah.
I'm Indian. Well, we went out. That must have been in 1874. I forget which. It was in the 70s when the United States got Alaska. So I listened before United States got Alaska.
Uh-huh, before that. Then.
Yeah. He married my mother and he went out. And we went out and my brother was born. My sister's alive. My brother, he's about 6 years older than I am. We stayed out there.
In the United States?
In San Francisco. Father was a marine engineer by trade, and he got a job right away on these back and forth boats going through Russia? Is that Siberia?
Siberia,
yeah, back and forth. Well, Father, whenever he'd come home on these long trips, now I was born.
Yes.
I'm born now. Father, he'd make trips, and whenever he'd come back, first thing I know, we'd never know where, no telephone, no nothing in them days.
No.
Only way we'd know that his ship had called into port was, Father with a wagon or something would bring three or four cases of whiskey and three or four beers and all that stuff. Father's
home.
Father's home. Sure enough, towards evening when he's off duty, he come in with his pals. And and when he'd get on his drunken jags, that's when he'd have the American flag. He had the American flag tucked in the house.
Very proud of it.
Yeah, he's very. Say, son, I want you to be good to that flag. He says, I'm American citizen. You're American born citizen, says. He says, son, don't trample on that flag. Be good to it. I never got that.
No.
Well, Father, he finally one of these days, now this for years and years, about I was about 4 years old. I asked my mother, I says, Dad ought to be home. We never used to call him Dad, we always call him Papa. I said, Papa ought to be home. I say, he's overdue now. So she calls down in the office. She goes down with a car somewhere, and he's not down. He's not on their books anymore. He forgot to report for work. Now this is 2 months after. Didn't know what become of father. I was about 4 years old, about 5 years old, going to five. About 2 years after, she gets a wire from Liverpool, England, from the American consul. Father had been, they gotten him drunk, and they had shanghaied him. Shanghaied him right out of San Francisco port. When he come to, he told her to go to work. Didn't make no difference. He had a family in San Francisco, that's no difference. You go to work. In the meantime, it seemed like he's on a sailing boat. He landed way over, they put him ashore at Liverpool, England. He got sick.
While he's out
on a boat, and they put him in a Liverpool in a marine hospital. So Father, he calls on the American consul. He tells him that he'd been shanghaied. Want to know if he'd do something. Also, to send a telegram to his wife at San Francisco, which the American consul did. And that's what the I come down one morning, and mother's crying to beat the band. And I thought she was sick. I said, "What's the matter, mother?" I hugged her and kissed her. "What's the matter, mother? What's the matter?" "Oh, your papa's way over in England, in a hospital. He's sick. They put him ashore. What do you want to take him over there for? He was stolen. He was stolen from down here." And underneath the American consul, and located in Liverpool Marine Hospital. "We'll come home as soon as I'm well." Eli Tatarov. So father's gonna come home. Pretty soon, about a couple of months after, I heard mother crying to beat the band. I goes down, I says, "What's the matter, Ma?" "Papa's dead. He died over there in Liverpool." So
died in the same hospital.
Same hospital.
Uh-huh.
So that was the last of him.
Yeah.
So I had my brother, sister, and myself. The oldest brother died.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger brother, he was about 2 years old, Eli. He's named after my dad.
Uh-huh.
So mother, she hops around him. That's what I've been trying to locate. She puts us into a great big Catholic school, orphan school.
Uh-huh.
It's outside of San Francisco. And I was there till I was 6 years old. My brother put into the little children's home. My sister was gonna put in another place. And then
all separated.
All separated. It's right outside of San Francisco. I remember a big factory way down on the beach there on the shore, and the bridge crossing the San Francisco Bay. And I was trying to tell his father Nouveau about it.
Yes.
I thought he'd get trace of me, and what I wanted to get, see, I haven't got any birth certificate.
No. No birth certificate.
No birth certificate. I've been trying here and there. But
well, that's a big San Francisco fire probably destroyed all those records.
Yeah. Well, mother, she come to Alaska then. And she come to Alaska. She got married to a fellow by the name of Walker.
Oh, there's your name.
That's my name. Well, in the 90s, in the 1890s, mother began to introduce me around at 40 Mile. These old timers and my son.
Uh-huh.
"What's his name?" Tatarov. "Ah, he's an American citizen now. Cut that, Tatarov. You're Walker, and I call him Walker."
Oh, yeah.
Walker. So I become Walker ever since.
Uh-huh. Well,
The other Walkers, they're over here in Holy Cross Mission.
Your brother?
Stepbrother.
Your stepbrother, yes. Stepbrother.
James Walker and Arthur Walker.
Uh-huh.
And Jimmy Walker. Fred Walker. They're all boys.
Uh-huh.
I heard they're still living over there. So that's how I become a Walker.
Oh, yes. That's interesting.
You know, father had died in Liverpool, and he's buried over there. He died in the Marine Hospital. So, mother, she took us out of the Catholic school. She took me out of the Catholic school. And then she put me in a Russian school in San Francisco. I stayed there a year, and then pretty soon they were very mean to me. The ones that were supposed to be the overseers of the school, the Russian priest and the bishop and all these men. I found out that it's for the money's sake.
She didn't pay them enough.
No, I didn't pay them enough. Well, mother sent word down to my aunt to take me out of the Russian school and to live with her till transportation. I could get transported from San Francisco to Alaska, which did happen. And that happened in the fall of 1886.
You were 6 years old.
Oh, 6 years old. Uh-huh. 1886. So I landed there at St. Michael's in the fall, and I was told to go up to a house. In fact, a native boy, a fellow by the name of Stefan Ivanov.
Another Russian extraction.
He took me up. He took me into an old lady, and I could see him. She could talk Russian. I could talk nothing but Russian in them days.
Oh, you didn't speak English?
No.
Oh.
Because mother always talked Russian to me. So I don't forget it. It still rings in my ear what my supposed grandma said to me. Stefan Ivanov told her, "This is your grandson." "My grandson? Come from San Francisco. Oh. He's a bad boy out there, and they send him up to me because he's no good." I never forgot that.
At 6 years old.
I never forgotten that. I thought that was a pretty good introduction to my grandma.
Yes.
Well, the old steamer Arctic, she got wrecked. And that's how I got to Alaska. In 1886, in the early days, the steamer used to make only one trip a year to St. Michael. And from that one trip, all the outlying stations, trading stations, were supported with the goods that come in that late. And they all come down, rowboats, sailboats, boats that carry 3-4 tons. Well, this year, this Captain Peterson, he's the fellow that's there, he's the captain on the boat for the AC companies.
That's the Alaska Commercial.
Alaska,
yes.
AC Company, mm-hmm. Alaska mm-hmm. Commercial Company. So, Peterson, he always liked the bottle. The steamer is heavily loaded. In a southeast wind blowing, he was told not to leave in that kind of a dirty weather because the steamer was heavily loaded. Lab the record, I'm my own boss, I'm running this ship. He went in spite of their warning. And this AC company, the old St. Paul, the first one, she's out there, just had a few more, little more cargo to put off, and while this Peterson went around the point towards Stebbins, he got into the swells and all that, and snap goes the chains on the boat, and the steamer drifted ashore. So the captain of the boat here, he immediately sent over a runner to St. Michael a note to tell these fellows about the accident that happened to the boat. So when he lost that cargo of goods, them fellows outside, they sent in another shipload to replace that. In the meantime, the steamer was taken up the river and put away for the winter quarters. Now this 40-mile area, there's lots of miners up there. There's no Dawson then.
No.
About 40-mile river, that's just where the miners were. And below at different stations, traders They had goods, and they expected the steamer to come up with the goods. Something's happened. No steamer. The fellow who's running the AC store at 40 Mile, he tells his man, he calls a meeting, he says, "Boys, I haven't got the goods to carry you through the winter. Something's happened to the steamer. Best thing you boys can do is jump in board of boats and drift down the Yukon and get as far as Nulata, then go overland." He says, "It'll be all right. If you meet the steamer coming up, why, you can just jump on board.
Come back."
These fellows, they come down. They got as far as Nulata. No steamers. And it started freezing, slush ice and all. And they thought it was time to ditch their boats and go overland, which they did. And they come in the latter part of December. These miners did.
Yeah. They came into where now from Nulato?
Yeah. They got dog teams, those who could afford it, they got dog teams, and those who couldn't, they just pull their sleds and about 200 of them, close to 300.
Now where did they go from Nulato? Into St. Michael?
To Unalakleet, overland.
Unalakleet.
Yeah, overland.
Yes.
A shortcut.
Oh, yes.
That's a shortcut from the Yukon.
Okay.
That was in 1886, 1887.
Uh-huh.
Close to 1887. Well, finally, I got acquainted with these miners, eh? All these old timers come down from 40 Mile and... In 1888, in this winter time, my mother, she got word that I was in St. Michael's. She's just close to, just above Tanana. Walker was stationed up there with a trading post, just above Tanana. And Mayo was stationed it at the mouth of Tanana. What they call that? Is that the Tanana?
This is Mayo.
Al Mayo's?
Yes. I'm not sure. The mouth of the Tanana.
And I've forgotten their names. Harper, he was stationed up at Dawson.
Harper was still at Dawson.
Dawson. He was still at Dawson. Uh-huh. He had they divided out to be able to get in the furs that way.
Yes.
These AC traders.
Uh-huh.
Well, in 1888. My grandmother got a letter from my mother to ship me to Unalakleet.
For just a little kid, too.
Yeah, a little kid. Ship me to Unalakleet. She says it's too late for me to go up to Holy Cross. Ship me to Unalakleet. And that she'd make it good with him. Mm-hmm. About my board and all that. So that's how I got to Unalakleet. I got to Unalakleet and natives were pretty poor. Lived in dugout houses.
Sod.
Sod house. Uh-huh. Underground.
Yes.
And the mission had started, and they didn't have very good. You ever been to Unalakleet?
No. No.
They say it's built up wonderful.
I guess so, but that was a poor part of the country.
Yeah, it's pretty poor. Well, I got there, and I stayed with them in 88, 89, 90, 91, 92. The mission, they got in their head that they all spread out. Which they did. One of the missionaries, they had their own team, they had a driver. They come around, they investigated right down to the To Galvin Bay.
What church was this missionary?
The Covenant. They call it the Covenant.
The Covenant.
Before it used to be a Swedish Evangelical.
Oh, yes. Swedish.
Covenant. But now they just call it the Covenant.
Yes.
And a fellow by the name of A. E. Carson, he was the head man of at Uno Creek. He could talk Russian. Well, then they spread out, and this other missionary, a fellow by the name of August Anderson, he come on with a dog team, and he was investigating. He reported that there was a big area of Eskimos living close to Galvin Bay, and that Galvin Bay would be the most likable place to get them together. Mm-hmm. They'd come from, the way he put it up, he said they'd come from the Cape down there, Norton Bay area and all that. They'd come in, and from Fish River they'd come in and make Galvin Bay the central point. But it didn't work out that way. For a year, the natives did come down. Now, I'm talking about 1892.
Yes.
Well, this August Anderson, who he sent out in the wintertime with a dog team, and he investigated them, he reported in that Chinik, that's the Eskimo name, Chinik. But at the present time, Galvin Bay.
Oh, yes.
He says that would be the most likely place for the natives to get together and start a mission. So in 1892, this fellow, he, soon as the ice went out of the bay, out of the Uno Creek Bay, he gets a hold of a fellow by the name of who was starting in trading for the AC company, a fellow by the name of Edwin Ingolstadt. Got a hold of his big whale boat, and we come around in a boat. I thought it was just on for a picnic. Pretty soon, we come in amongst the ice floe, and we landed way down there at Galvin Bay. That's when I found out that I was picked for to be an interpreter. I picked up the native language, yeah.
And you were going to be an interpreter for this missionary school.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The others were, they couldn't talk.
No.
So I picked up the Uno Creek language and St. Michael language very easily. Being young, of course.
Yes, well now then, you could speak English, Russian, a little Eskimo probably by that time, and Indian.
Yeah.
And the different dialects that of the river area there.
Yeah.
Mr. Walker, I think this tape is about out, and I'll have to turn it over, so we'll stop now for just a minute.
We come around.
This is Andre Loftus and Fred T. Walker of Nome, still chatting in Charlie Jones' house, and this is the second side of the tape. Now, Fred Walker, would you go ahead?
So, we landed at Galvin. Chinik. Eskimos, they call it Chinik, on account of the, it's got a long point. Sandy point. And up at the end is kind of slim, just like this.
Oh.
Chinik. But the whites, they call it Galvin, since they got the post office in there.
Yeah.
Well, we landed there, and there's some horses that belonged to the Silver Mine Company. They had operated a silver mine up around Fish River there. The silver mine in the Eskimo name is Umailak. Umailak. On the map, It's that. It's written that way.
Yes.
Mine. So these horses, they attracted my attention. I'd seen horses when I was out in San Francisco. Mules. So I inquired around on the silver mine company after using their horses all winter. The year before, they'd taken them down to Galvin. And the grass being long and easily cut, they had them winter there. But there's only a few of them left. They've been starving. Oh, they had about six or eight of them, mules and horses. That's what attracted my attention, right at Galvan. So they put up the mission. Along comes Sunday, I was the interpreter. The natives, they couldn't understand English. Hey, look, they say, this fellow, he's interpreter, yes, he's interpreter. He's good. He picked it up down at Unalakleet. So, they kept me there for 2 years. I was interpreting, pretty soon, right, the fella who was at the founder of the mission at Unalakleet, he come in the boat, and the boat landed out there in Galvan. They didn't have barges to unload with. They just shoved the lumber, bundle them together, hoist them and drop them into the water, and skin boats towed them ashore. That was
exciting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's how they got their lumber there. Well, I was at Galvan for 2 years, and finally, my aunt from 40 Mile area. No, my aunt, she came in from the outside. That's it.
The one who had been in San Francisco.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She came in and she's landed at St. Michael's and she asked the mission about me. Bring him over. They had a boat of their own, a little sailing boat that carried about 4 or 5 tons. And that's how I got over to St. Michael's and she asked the mission, who was supposed to be the head man. Says, what is this boy supposed to be? He's supposed to be going to school at your place up in Unalakleet. Got school over at Galvan? No, we're just starting. Bring him over immediately. His mother's paying you so much a day, year, $500 a year.
To be taught at Unalakleet,
yeah.
And they were using you at Galvan.
They were using me at Galvan. That's what she kicked about.
Uh-huh.
And they brought me right back. So, in 1895, the AC, they start to building a big boat at St. Michael's. They brought in a big all the material to run up and down the Yukon, and it was called the Steamer Alice.
Steamer Alice.
She was the biggest boat on the Yukon then.
Uh-huh.
All them natives, they used to call her the smokestack. They had a big, resemble a seine, or to catch it. The idea was to catch the sparks so they wouldn't go and set the country afire.
Oh, yes, spark arrestor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So any time that boat come along, the Eskimos, they got a name for it. Neskolik.
Neskolik.
Neskolik, that means the steamer with a head on.
Oh, because of the big spark arrestor.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They call it the Neshkolik. Well, I come down to, come to Unalakleet, and pretty soon I got a letter. I got a letter to report for duty from the East, for the EC. I wasn't 15 yet. Report for duty on board the steamer Alice. How that come? The chief engineer of the steamer Alice, he used to be shipmates with my father in the early days.
Oh.
And both of them were engineers. So when he come to Dawson, to 40 Mile, my mother, she talked to him. That she got a boy, he's put me 15 years old. And she exaggerated, she said I was 16, I was only 15.
Oh.
He's big enough to start in training to be an engineer. You pick him up, start him in. So that's how I got, when I come to St. Michael's, and I got a letter from mother, report for duty on board the steamer. So I reported. He looked at me, this fellow by the name of Hansen, Chief Engineer Hansen. So he says, "You're Eli Tutterworth's boy." "Yes," I said, "that's him." But I says, "I'm going to change it. Don't change it. Don't change it. Don't change it." After I got to circle around them bunch around 40 miles, that's when I become a walker.
Yes.
Old times. Well, I got to work. And I thought it was something I did love. I loved to tinker around machinery and all that. And
you were your father's boy.
Yeah, I love that. So when I come to 40 Mile, I went up and visited my mother, and Russian style, hug and kiss me and cry and jabber away. And she asked me, "Do you still understand Russian?" I said, "I understand a little bit, but when they talk in a certain language, it seems like there's a whole lot of dialects in Russian language."
Yes.
"When they talk a certain dialect, I can understand them very good, yet."
Yes, that's good.
In the early days when the Russians were getting their planes from the outside and coming to here,
uh-huh,
landed here, and I could see them soldiers, the deckhands or the flyers, they'd come along the street and they'd jabber away, and I'd understand them.
This is during the last war.
During the last war. They fly the planes out from outside or to Fairbanks. And
mm-hmm. That's right, from Fairbanks up to Nome and then to Siberia and to Russia.
Yeah. So I got to talking with a woman, talking with one, and says, "Panamais Peruski?" I says, "A little bit." I said, "I'm forgetting it. It's going away," I said. Well, where was I?
You were on board the boat.
Oh, on board the boat.
You were learning the trade of engineer.
Yeah, learning the trade of engineer. So I got on board. And I kept that job winter and summer for 3 years, going on to 4 years. Dollar a day.
Dollar a day. Uh-huh.
I thought it was big money.
In those days it was.
It was big money. Well, This last year that I worked for the AC, we got stuck down at, we left St. Michael pretty late, towing two barges. That's when the AC got it in their idea, steamer load. Why not two barges? We took two barges. But we got froze in at the present time they call it New Hamilton. We went into a saloon there and we wintered. After we'd broken the ice and got located way inside of a saloon, along comes these other boats Dawson Stampede is on.
Oh.
That's what it was.
Uh-huh.
I remember that well. This is in 1896, when we got up to 40 Mile. Uh-huh. We was going on board, and in comes the news to about the Dawson Stampede. We were supposed to keep it quiet, and we were the last steamer up. So the AC, well, the whole 40 Mile area, oh, we got into Circle City, that's it. Circle City, that's about 150 miles below 40 Mile.
Uh-huh.
And the superintendent, the manager of the Circle City store, station for the AC, he yells up to the captain, he says, "Captain, got good news for you." "What is it? What is the good news?" "They made a strike up at Dawson." Boy, you could see all them passengers there lined up on the banks, and boats and sleds and dogs.
Everybody going to Dawson.
Going to Dawson, Stampede.
Yeah.
We was going to be the first boat up. We say, "Here are the passengers, all waiting. Huh, what about the boat? It froze in." Boy, he comes down. And he jumps the cab. They had it out. The captain, he insisted. He turned back. Boat gonna be lost. It froze in. The superintendent says, "What is a boat to the AC company? That's nothing. Drop in the bucket. This way, we're looking for trade. We're looking for trade. You gotta get that trade. You gotta get in all this, all these passengers." Boy, they unloaded. Miners, they say, "Captain, we'll on the boat. We'll unload the boat all night. Work all night, just so you get off tomorrow." My gosh, they done it.
They did.
They did it. Just to get the boat off, to get up to Dawson.
That fever, that Stampede
fever. That
fever.
Yeah. Sleds and dogs.
Oh.
They had them all up on top of the deck, in between deck, and that steamer was loaded. Down in the bottom.
How many men did you take?
It must have been over close to 300.
Oh.
See, the whole population of Circle City. Gee, great. We got up to up to 40 Mile, and the same thing. Some more jumped on board. couldn't keep them from jumping on board. Well, we got up to Dawson. And boy, there's nothing but trees. So an old timer, he happened to be working on board the boat that year. I seen these fellas jump off, and then they'd run off in the timber. I said, "What are them fellas running in the timber for?" He says, "Taking town lots. I said, "How do they know it's gonna be a town lot here?" But I found out that Hopper and Ladue had asked for a grant from the English government for so many acres, and they got the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And they sold it, that's where they made
them. That was Harper and Ladue.
Ladue, yeah,
uh-huh.
Up in Dawson.
Oh, yeah.
Harper was my uncle.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder what became of the Harper boys.
I'll tell you about it when we're through here, remind me.
Uh-huh. Yes, the big rush was on, up to Dawson. So, when he was coming down, the purser, and all the officials of at 40 Mile Circle, said, "Look here, it's the last boat down. Everybody keep mum about the Dawson strike." So I was kind of, I said, "How come? What's the matter?" AC wants to get in a big killing. AC company, get the first trade. So we got down to St. Michael's, and not a word said. Loaded two barges and beat it. We got in, that's the time we got into Andreski. It was the second year when we come up with two other bond orders. It was the second year where we got stuck. We didn't make it. But the first time, we made it. First going out, well, that was all frozen over. The NAT company had heard about this Dawson strike, but it was too late for navigation. And how they did cuss us for being so quiet. What's that old saying? Greediness makes greediness for money make a person hoggish?
Oh, I'm sure it does too.
Well, we got down
to. You're good for an hour yet, anyway, ain't you, Fred?
Hey?
You're good for an hour yet, anyway, aren't you? You'll not get tired in an hour.
I don't know. It's the lady.
Oh, I'm enjoying every minute of this.
I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Okay, Charlie.
Well, we get into. We get into.
Don't cover up the microphone.
We get into. New Hamilton. We wintered. No, it's the second year. The second year, we tried to get into New Hamilton. We got stuck. Andretti's a big town now. It is winter quarters for the whole AC company's outfit, steamers. We had quite a bunch of men up there, stores and everything. We tried to make Andretti, couldn't do it. So we went into winter quarters at New Hamilton. It was New Hamilton, but it became New Hamilton afterwards, I heard, when the NAT company, they saw it was a good winter quarter place for ships. They took over after the AC left.
Uh-huh.
And it became New Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Well, we get into New Hamilton. They unloaded the boat and all that. And So we was eating, and the chief, he says, at the table, he says, "Captain, where are you going to spend Christmas?" And I guess here. The chief says, "You got a team, Captain. I've got a team. Let's go spend Christmas at Andretti. Drive up there with Doc, hey, when it's time to go." So, it was on the 22nd, I think, or 23rd of December when we left the steamer. Two teams. Captain had heading for Andretti.
How many men?
Just four.
Oh, four men. Oh.
Yeah. Two teams. They had good teams. So we got to Andretti on the 24th of December.
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve. In the meantime, I heard the rumors going around town that there's some visitors had come from this area. From Nelson Island. And I says, "Where they heading for?" "Oh, Point Barrow, I heard it is." And they says, "They're going around from house to house looking for guides to take them from here, from Andretti down to St. Michael's." Pretty soon, the chief, he comes in. He says, "Fred, I've recommended you to these Captain Jarvis and Dr. Cole." Oh boy, they're dressed up to beat the band, uniform and everything. And
thought they were really something.
Geez, yes, really something. This is Dr. Cole, he says, of the Revenue Court of Service, and this is Captain Jarvis of the Revenue Court of Air. Says, "He's looking for a guide. I says, "Get Frank Kummeroff. Get Frank Kummeroff." Well, they went down to Frank, and "You Frank Kummeroff, I'm looking for a guy." And Fred Walker recommended you to us. Oh, he's better than me. Get him. Get him. No, I don't want to go, he says. So they come rushing back. And, well, did you get him? No, the chief, he says. No, he says, for you to go, Fred. So this journalist, he turns on to this chief, to my boss, and says, what's Fred's getting a day? What is his salary? $1 a day. All right. From now on, he gets $2.50 a day.
Well.
Uncle Sam. You gonna go, Fred? No. Tomorrow's Christmas. Tomorrow's Christmas. There's lots of people there that I knew of. That's what has interested me more, girls and boys and young people. And so he turns around and says, you got any more men, Chief? No. He's made a good many trips. Good many trips from here down to St. Michael's. He knows it like a book. Well, kid, he says, he turns around to me and says, kid, you gonna come? No, I say, tomorrow's Christmas, tomorrow. My gosh, he gets in his hand pocket and he pulls out a pair of cuffs, handcuffs.
Handcuffs.
He says, now I'm gonna cuff you to the sled. He says, and you ride, you just tell us which way to go. But I got scared.
Well, I would think.
Gee, my heart began to thumping, and so I said, I'll go. He says, don't forget, from now on, you're Uncle Sam. Your time is transferred from the AC over to Uncle Sam's at 2.50 a day. That's how they got me in. So we left, got down to St. Michael's, going along, and he began to talk about Point Barrow to me. He saw I was a good dog driver, and they had a good team. That they got from Nelson Island from a trader. There were 11 dogs, brothers and sisters, out of one litter.
Oh, perfect.
And they were crackerjacks. Yeah, the best team I ever seen. So he began talking. He saw I was pretty well, pretty good on a dog team. He said, go to Point Barrow with me? Sure, I said. First I hesitated. I says, maybe too far. Oh, he says, get to Point Barrow. He said, when I get there, springtime, the bear will come. You'll come back to St. Michael's on the revenue cutting there. I said, all right, I'll go then, I'll go. 2.50 a day, he said.
Yeah, I'm afraid of this.
Yeah. So we got down. I got him down to St. Michael's. He says, Fred, I've decided to leave you here. He said, there's another party coming behind me. Lieutenant Berthoff, second in command of this expedition. He says, I'm the rush man. I'm trying to rush through and get up there before he gets. He says, Berthoff, he'll come along and he'll go by the way of Union Creek, Cutsby Way, and
overland.
He says, this way, I got to go up to Cape Prince Wales. I says, I want to go to Point Barrow. I'm going to go to Point Barrow, do you remember? Oh, I says, I'm leaving you at... He says, I'll write a note and I'll send a letter back to Berthoff. So he left me. I got him down as far as St. Michael's.
How many days?
Oh, I think 12 days to St. Michael's. And from there, I stayed at St. Michael, waiting for Berthoff to show up, taking care of the dogs, resting the dogs. He says, get anything you want, charge it up to the government, let them put it on the book. He says, we'll make it square. So I waited and waited and waited. Gee whiz. Bertoff was, well, finally he come here, way behind. Less than a month, about 3 weeks, I guess. He's traveling, he had a bum team. I saw him right away. I says, I'm supposed to take you to another clinic. He says, all right. Dog's in good condition and all that. And I says, fine. Been exercising him every day. Best in the land. So we went to another clinic. We made that in 2 days. 2 days run. Boy, the dogs were good. Finally, you got to Inla Creek, and Bertoff, he told me, he says, Fred, I got a letter from Jarvis. He says for you to stay here and wait for the AC team that Jarvis has taken to Cape Prince of Wales until they get back. He says, I suppose take him into St. Michael's, the AC team. Boy, I waited and waited and waited. About a month. Putting a month and a half, I guess. Finally, they come. Bertoff had gone. He says, Fred, Jarvis says to drop you here. He doesn't want you to go to Point Barrow anymore. He says, you're the handy man, and he says, you're to take the dogs back to St. Michael's and deliver them over to the AC company, which was the AC team, which I did. After I delivered them, in the meantime, this boss, this chief engineer, Hansen, chief engineer Hansen, and his driver, he come in from Andreski, from the steamers, working for the AC company. We always had a 2 months leave of absence with pay.
Oh, in the winter, I suppose.
In the winter, yeah. Uh-huh. They gave us that privilege. And then it was up to us, go ahead and chase around all we want, uh-huh, but be on time to report for work. So the chief come. While I was waiting, when I delivered the dogs to the AC company, a couple of days after, the second day, the chief come along. Oh, he said, Fred, I see you here. I said, I haven't been paid, chief. Oh, he said, them governments, they're slow. He said, you'll have to send in vouchers and everything, he says. But he says, you'll get paid for it. In the meantime, I seen this, fellow by the name of Frank Komarov. I says, Chief, can you take me back onto the AC payroll? Sure, Fred, he says, but not the same wages you get from the government, he says. $1 a day, I says, yeah, I says, at $2.50, I says, sounds good. Yeah, I says, no. $1 a day. So I took it. So this Frank Komarov, he's on the other watch. He's working the same boat I was working on. He says, I says, are you on vacation now, Frank? He says, yes. Yeah. I says, how about me chipping in? Sure, Fred. He says, I asked him, I said, where do you want to go for vacation? Kuskokwim, he says. Oh, I says, Kuskokwim, my foot, I says. I says, I don't know anybody over in Kuskokwim. He says, I do, which was a fact. He always done trading and buying furs and picking up dogs, traveling back and forth between Kuskokwim and St. Michael's. I says, let's go to Gullivan. I says, you've been there before. All right. To Gullivan, we went. Now, this is in 1897. So, I'm going to make it short. We got to Unalakleet. And from Unalakleet, we went along the shore and got up to Cape Denby and cross Norton Sound and crept down along Norton Sound, and we divided over into Galloway Bay for the portage. And the first thing that attracted my attention was there was four white men. John A. Dexter, that's where he always lived. John A. Dexter. I got acquainted with him in 1892. When he found out I was to be interpreter for the mission, he says, "You're nothing but a kid." He says, "The Bible's a hard thing to understand." I say, "I just interpret what they say. That's all." I got out of that way. Uh-huh. Well, the first thing that attracted my attention was four white men. I asked John, I say, "Who are these white men, John?" He seemed to be pretty friendly with me. Oh, he says, "They're prospectors. They come over from St. Michael's last fall." He says, "They've been going to go prospecting." He says, I said, "Prospecting for what?" "For gold, just like Dawson, just like Circle City." I said, "Where'd they go?" He said, "They don't know themselves." But in the meantime, there was an old native there, Tom Warwick. I remember seeing him in St. Michael's in 1896. You know, when I was a team of land in St. Michael's, well,